tonight. First, with the nation's news.
Where Motherwell owner Les Hutchison says relegation would not spell disaster for the Lanarkshire club as long as supporters continue turning up. The Sealmen are second bottom of the Premiership, but Hutchison told fans the club's future is in their hands.
With their team slumped in the relegation playoff zone, Motherwell fans are fearing the worst. But the club's new owner Les Hutchison has alleviated concerns over what life outside the top flight could mean for the Lanarkshire side's very existence. In a podcast answering supporter questions, he said, would it be the end of Motherwell Football Club? The answer to that would be no. I would caveat that by saying what I said before, it's up to you guys. If you still come, if you still do your thing, if you help us rebuild and hopefully bounce straight back up again, then all will be well.
Hello and welcome to the By the Min MFC podcast. Tonight, Press Association Scottish Sport editor Gavin McCafferty joins regulars Jay and Busta. Welcome along, guys. How are we all?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Cheers.
Yeah, great. Magic.
I'm always good.
Good stuff. Well, what certainly was good was the performance on Friday night. A 4-0 hammering of Hamilton Accies. Jay, it was everything we hoped for and a bit more, really. A tight first half, closely contested, and a stunning second half display where we got everything we deserved, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. There was only one team in it from start to finish. You're right, first half started a little bit slower, but second half we were absolutely brilliant. But I don't think it's unexpected. I think we all said last week in the Extra Time podcast, I think we were all really confident in our victory. I think we've seen the signs that we're progressing. We've got the players now that can create chances and put those chances away. And when you put that together with the poor form that Hamilton Accies have been on recently, I think there was only ever going to be one winner. But it was a great performance, and it's up to us now to build on that and to take it forward, because if we play like that for the rest of the season, then there's absolutely no danger we're going down.
Buster, many standout performances on Friday night, Lionel Ainsworth particularly grabbing the headlines. I think he answered a few critics on Friday, didn't he?
Again, maybe not, because I don't think MD's ever doubted his ability. It's more his attitude and his willingness that was in question. There's maybe, 7 or 8 games left of the season now. He's out of contract. So, you know, he's got to put himself in a short window, whether it's if he wants a contract here or he wants to go somewhere else. You know, he's got to step up, and if he plays like that, then leaves at the end of the season, plays like that for the rest of the year and then leaves, then, you know, as long as he helps us stay in the division, I don't suppose he'll have any complaints. But as you say, there was a couple of standouts, a couple of goals for John Sutton as well, but I actually thought Stephen Pearson was the best player on the park, to be fair. There was anything fancy, never done anything spectacular. But even just his presence in that team, you know, gives Lasley a bit of a break as well. So, you know, I think he's done everything simple, but I think Bureau was probably the best player in the park.
Gavin, you would have had a different vantage point on Friday night. Being part of the atmosphere, it felt like one of the best atmospheres at Fir Park in a long time. Did that transcend into the press box as well? Was that noticeable, the change in atmosphere at Fir Park on Friday?
Well, I was actually in the East End myself because I was off on Friday night, so I worked during the day. So it was actually up the other end of the East End for you, but I thought the atmosphere was great. It's one of the best from Fir Park for a long time, because you got the, you're probably right in amongst it in the usual singing section, but up the other end there was the singing up there and the David Cooper stand as well. So it just felt like everybody was kind of together and part of it, and you know, with the team as well, which is exactly what the team's going to need for the next couple of months. So yeah, it was good.
Jay, I suppose the downside in all this is we now have 15 days of no football until the return game against Kilmarnock in the beginning of April. Is that a good or bad thing? Momentum seems to be with us, and then we have to go on a 15-day break. It's quite frustrating, isn't it?
I think it just boils down to how the management team and that go about things. I think that momentum is great, but it's not the be all and end all. Just because we've played brilliantly and now we have a 2 week break doesn't mean that rustiness is going to set in, or we're going to take a while to get going in 2 weeks. If you do the things that you should be doing in training and you keep motivated and you keep focused on the game in 2 weeks, then I don't see it being, you know, too big an issue. I think we should be looking forward to the 2 weeks. In fact, that gives us another 2 weeks to bed in the players who are making an impact. You know, the likes of Marvin Johnson, you know, Buster's mentioned Pearson, the new players who've came in and who have actually made an impact. It's another 2 weeks for them to bed in. So I'd be looking more at the positive side of another 2 weeks to sort of prepare for what is going to be the games that decide whether we stay up or go down. So I'm quite happy with those 2 weeks. Just to pick up on what Buster was saying there about Lionel Ainsworth, when you say, I think, about him answering these critics, I don't think he has answered these critics. I think he's basically justified the criticism, because as Buster said, nobody's faulted his ability. He's a great player, and that just makes it so frustrating when, you know, 4 out of 5 games he's not interested. So if he does carry that form forward and that motivation and that work effort into the remainder of the season, then he'll prove his critics wrong. But at the moment, he's kind of just justified any criticism of a great player who doesn't do it often enough.
Gavin, were you surprised to see Ainsworth return to the starting 11 after weeks of quite heavy criticism from both the fans, and it did seem the manager kind of intimated as well that he wasn't satisfied with his work rate? He's clearly upped his game in training and get back in the side.
Well, I think that's one of the most encouraging things about Friday night, because, you know, you had Ainsworth who, I have to say, when some of the new players came in at the start of February, I thought we'd maybe not see him in the starting for a while, but he's clearly shown a lot in training, because the manager's picked him right off the bench a few times. He got that goal against Inverness, and to work his way back into the starting 11, it suggests he's putting effort in training, because I don't think the manager would accept somebody in his team is not putting effort in. That's the thing he made clear when he came in, the manager, that he will not accept anything other than total hard work. So I think that's the encouraging thing as well. You get John Sutton coming off the bench, and I think John would be, nobody would ever question John Sutton's attitude and his professionalism, but, you know, he's obviously dropped out of the team. He's had a hard season with not a lot of service, to be honest, and he's then, you know, dropped out of the team at a crucial time when there maybe is a bit more service. So, but he's come on, he's scored 2 goals. I think it shows that the manager's possibly able to, you know, to keep people happy, because there's a lot of players now vying for places. And, you know, to have Ainsworth coming back in the team and doing well, to have John Sutton coming off the bench and doing well, is a really good sign, because, you know, the danger is with so many contract players, with the manager bringing in new players, something similar to maybe Hibs could have happened last season, where the, you know, a lot of players think, oh, well, you know, we're not going to play for the manager, he's going to punt us in the summer. But, you know, that was, I think, one of the key kind of positives on Friday, is that there does seem to be a good togetherness and what is a kind of a new look squad. So, yeah, I have to admit, you know, Lionel Ainsworth's kind of rejuvenation is kind of, it's, you know, a pleasant surprise, yeah.
I see the team are heading for Sunderland for a friendly on Friday, so Ian Barraclough certainly not letting up in the squad. Buster, a point of note from Friday night's game, John Sutton's 2 goals took him level with Stevie Kirk as Motherwell's top Scottish League goal scorer. Sutton, as Gavin pointed out, has had a hard time this season, pretty much starved of service, but he's still come up with some big goals. He scored at Ross County away, scored away to St Mirren, the winning goal there, got the winner against Partick Thistle, and popped up with another 2 on Friday night. Out of contract at the end of the season, is Sutton someone that you would like to see stay around at Fir Park?
Immediately, my heart sort of says yeah. As you say, he's a goal scorer. He does what he does. He's level now, as you say. I think it's post, you know, the 1970-odd reconstruction, the level with Stevie Kirk now. So immediately I would say, yeah, I would like to keep him. But again, it all depends. I've heard he's on a fair whack of cash from, obviously he was on a fair whack at Hearts, so he's probably up down, but he's probably still one of the highest paid players. His, I don't want to say ability, because that's not the right word, but his things like his lack of pace and his inability maybe to close down defenders doesn't seem as if it's going to suit the way Barakov wants to play. I think that's basically why he's not in the team at the moment. And as you said though, he's scoring the goals. Even now, he's probably scored a quarter, if not more, of our goals this season. I think Jay pointed it to us the other day as well. I think he's fourth top scorer in the Premier League. It's a hard one, but I can see him leaving, to be honest with you. Just because it doesn't look like he's going to be able to fit into the way, the high pressing sort of game that Barakov seems to want to play, and that is actually looks as if he is starting to play where he's been shouting about it since he came in. And I think that was one of my sort of annoyances, that there wasn't any sort of pressing effectively when Sutton was in the team.
Jay, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's hard to know whether Scott McDonald will still be around. For myself, it's a no-brainer. If it comes down to McDonald or Sutton, I would take McDonald any day of the week. But Sutton's a very useful player to have, and now perhaps we're blessed with a few more options. It means we don't have to play him every game. Games that he's not suited to, he'll miss out on, and that's beneficial for the side.
Yeah, I think if he stays or not will come down, as you'd imagine, to how Barakov wants to play in the long term. I don't think we really have got a good idea yet of how Barakov really wants to play, because it's hard to really judge given the situation he's been thrown into. Are we currently playing, are players being brought in, and are we playing tactics because that is going to get his short-term results to keep us up, or are we seeing how Barakov really wants to play? And also finances, are we going to be able to afford to keep him? For me, John Sutton's got a lot of unfair flack this season. I think he's not done anything that he doesn't normally do. He plays the role of John Sutton. He doesn't hold the ball up like Michael Higden does. He doesn't have any pace. He doesn't work the channels. He scores goals. If you give him the ball into the area where you expect him to be, he'll put the ball in the net. That's what he's always done. So John Sutton's not playing any differently this season than he's ever done before. The only difference is there's not been any service to him. I think moving forward, if we could get somebody like Ainsworth putting in the performances every week like he did on Friday on one side, if you had someone like Marvin Johnson, who's been really impressive since he came in a couple of weeks ago, on the other, on the left flank, if you have the two of them with someone like Pearson behind them and then Sutton up front, Sutton will score an absolute barrel of the goals, because that's what he does. So for me, a lot of the flack he's got this season has been because he's not been scoring goals, but that's not actually his fault. He's put in the side to convert chances. There's very little else he'll be told to really do as a footballer. That's his job. And if people aren't giving him the chances, he's not going to score them. But in terms of him staying or not, it all boils down to whether Barraclough can use him in that role. If Barraclough is going to play with wingers and creative players that are going to create chances, then I think you're going to struggle to find someone with as good a record at scoring goals at SPL level as John Sutton, given the budget we're going to end up with. But he has to fit in with that budget. We can't make, we can't mess around with the budget to try and keep someone like John Sutton. I wouldn't break the bank for him. But I do think we would struggle to get just as good a proven goal scorer as John Sutton if he does leave in the summer.
I think that's more key than how Barakov wants to play, to be honest with you, because I honestly do think he'll be on quite a big wage. I mean, he went to Hearts, and Hearts were throwing money at players, and he's come into ourselves. He's no doubt took a big wage cut, but I think he'll still be on quite a fair packet, and I think that's going to be a bit of a stumbling block. But again, it depends on what he can get elsewhere, isn't it?
Gavin, do you think the fact that Sutton's made some poor moves over his time, it's not worked out for him at Wickham, it didn't work out for him at Millwall, didn't work out for him at Hearts, do you think that maybe would factor into his thinking come the end of the season when contract negotiations begin? He's maybe at the stage of his career that he has to make the right choice, or it could be his final move.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't imagine he had a tough decision when he went to Hearts, because he just, he had a good season with Millwall. I think he scored 17 goals that season, and he started off under Craig Brown playing in the left wing, which, wasn't his natural position. Clearly Hearts were paying a hell of a lot of money because, you know, it ended up, you know, got him into big, big trouble. But he seems to be, had his happiest times as a footballer at Motherwell. He's come back, scored a barrel load last, you know, season, relatively. And again, you know, as been pointed out, he has scored a few goals this season, even though, you know, he hasn't, you know, the team's not been creating many chances. So I would expect he'd have to factor that in. I don't know if he's got the appetite to go back down to England, because he does seem to do better in Scotland, and he's obviously got a young family here as well, and it seems to be settled. So, but I mean, there's so many different variables at this stage about, you know, where Mother will be, what they will be able to offer anybody, and you know, we don't really know what the manager thinks of all the players. Obviously, John's missed out the last couple of games, and Lee Irwin obviously is I thought he was magnificent. Freddie Lee just putting an unbelievable shift in, and he's got obviously more legs than John. But you know, I think John could score quite a few goals in the running. You know, he'll not be starting every game, but if he's coming on and scoring two goals in his first two touches, and then, you know, it just shows you he is clinical.
Jay, I want to talk about things away from football just for a minute or two, with a pretty in-depth conversation with Les Hutchison last Monday evening. One of the main points he brought up, or one of his many points, was talking about utilising the facilities at Fir Park. I believe that yourself and Buster went along to the David Cooper Suite on Friday. Don't want to be the ones that start being critical again, but I think we're possibly about to. You weren't too impressed.
Well, I've been in before. I've been in the Cooper a good few times, both before games and, you know, just for charity nights and that kind of thing. I mean, it does a job. It's a bar. It will give you a pint and you can hang about. But it does very little more than that. You know, we thought we would go along, get a pint or two before the game on Friday night, because off the back of what Les was saying. But, you know, as I've said a lot before, you know, when we're critical, I think we're observing, and it's easier to pick up on the things that you're going to criticise. I mean, if we just go, oh, yeah, it was fine, then we're not going to talk about it. So it might seem as though we're being critical. I think it's just that the things that you're critical about are the bigger talking points. It's just, it still needs to be a two-way deal. You know, Les Hutchison coming on and saying, you know, use the facilities if you can is fair enough, but only if the facilities are good. I mean, the Cooper Suite's never been that great. The layout's poor. I mean, it was absolutely roasting and smelt of a brewery when we were in on Friday night. There's a poor selection of drinks. I got a Jack and Coke, which, you know, I've drank enough Jack and Coke in my life to know that it wasn't Jack that was in it. Perhaps maybe High Commissioner or some other cheap brand whiskey. You know, it's just not a particularly great experience when you go to the Cooper Suite. And it's all very well expecting fans to use the facilities, but there needs to be, you know, they need to be getting value for money. There needs to be quality there. And it's not currently there. So I won't be back in the Cooper until, you know, there are improvements.
Gavin, this is something we discussed a wee bit earlier on today. Your dad was also present for the conversation. It's a bit of frustration and a bugbearer from other fans, especially people that are willing to change their match day habits to try and benefit the club. And it seems like the club haven't really quite progressed in terms of improving the facilities around the club to make sure these people stay and continue to give the club their custom.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was in after the game myself, and I met my dad in there after, you know, he'd finished in the boardroom, and you know, there was quite a lot of people in there, and it seemed fine, but you know, it seemed to finish a bit abruptly. It was a 10:15, and last orders were called, and we discovered that, you know, it was policy to close it an hour after the game, which didn't seem to make much sense when there was people in there wanting to drink. So I think there obviously, you know, improvements need to be made, and this is a good kind of turning point for the club with the new ownership, and hopefully a bit more help for the staff that are already there, and hopefully people can get about and see what's happening, because, you know, it's a big, you know, it has potential to make the club money. And I know in recent years, I used to go there before the game, and then people started to migrate to the bowling club. And it's about creating an atmosphere, just as much as you know, just asking people to come. I know that the club were introducing a bottle bank to try and get the queues down, because, you know, it used to be just you're queuing up for 20 minutes for one drink and people are turning around and leaving. So again, I think it's a work in progress, and I think people need to raise the issues of what's wrong and what they would like to see. So I think AMD, who's got any suggestions about how to improve it, and obviously they're pretty fundamental. If you think the whiskey wasn't what it was, then you know, it's good to raise them and keep raising them, because things will never improve unless people do raise them.
Yeah, I was quite impressed by Diane Harvey's ideas of introducing a suggestion box at Fir Park and make sure that people got a reply to their suggestions as well to try and improve things, and also utilising the bar for the Scotland-Gibraltar game on Sunday. There's a Q&A with Brian McCafferty and Alan Burrows, followed by keeping the bar open for the game, free pies at half-time. Just, I think Motherwell fans would prefer giving money to the football club than the local, just giving the Motherwell supporters. They want to see the club do well, but at the same token, it's got to be done well, or no one's going to come back after giving it a go. So I suppose that they are being proactive. It's just and they're so close to getting things right, but so far away at the same time. I want to move on to the Welsh Society. Gavin, I know you've got a bit of knowledge and a bit of involvement in the society. It's been what I would imagine a very busy time in recent months. Now that things are settling down, is there signs that the membership drive is moving in the right direction?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think you boys did a great job last week by getting Les on, and I think you're just the basic example of getting up and doing something and generating a bit of interest. You know, it kind of shows, you know, what can be achieved, because I know there were, you know, 2 or 3 dozen kind of new members joined right on the back of the podcast. And obviously you want it to be more, and it's about, you know, creating that momentum. And I think the latest appeal was for you know, members to try and recruit another member. But there are only a few people on the board and they happen to do a lot. And it is about, you know, the membership going out there and trying to persuade others to join. So I think there's been a lot of things, you know, you go back to the start of the Welsh Society and, you know, started by the club, and they just seemed to pass the baton over at first to the Welsh Society board, and it was quite a difficult thing to do for people who don't really know each other, who, with no precedent, you know, to judge what they're doing on, to then, you know, raise so much money. And again, like I think Jay said a few times, this is a kind of fresh start, and, you know, I think one of the main things that it needs to do, I mean, I know we talked about communications, it also needs to engage the members and the fans more. And I think there's, like you mentioned on Sunday, Brian and Alan Burrows are going to have a Q&A session, and there needs to be a lot more of that. And Diane Harvey's, you know, idea about the suggestion box, if you're going to ask people to, you know, to put their money in to kind of save the club and to own the club ultimately, then they need to be engaged in the running of it, and you know, and the things like this are a great example of what can be achieved if you know, there's a kind of, you know, a platform to debate things and to discuss things and to ultimately improve things. So you know, for me, there was no other option. And go back to November and December, it was a fraught period. I don't, obviously, people didn't know exactly what was going on because of, you know, Les wanted to be anonymous at first, and there was Argentinians trying to buy the club. You know, there was a lot of uncertainty, and there was a lot of, you know, complicating factors. John Bell's shares were controlled by other people, but, you know, he could have revoked that, you know, power of attorney. So it was so complicated, and the club did come close to being sold to Argentinians. And if it hadn't have been for, you know, Les's money, then, you know, I would have been in foreign ownership, or it would have been in deep, deep financial trouble. So there isn't any other option. It needs to work. So it's about making it work now. The more people that get involved, the better. The more people that put the money in, the better. But obviously, they need something back, and I think that's to be engaged, and that's the key challenge now, to get everybody engaged. You know, I think there's a focus group as well that, you know, one of the board members is starting, and that's, again, it's just a small thing, but it's another step in the right direction, and there's got to be more steps, and hopefully people will see that it is a positive thing, and it's the only thing that can happen to move the club forward, really.
Obviously, we wouldn't expect you to speak on behalf of your dad, but one of the issues we raised last week with Mr. Hutchison was the barriers, or the perceived barriers for fans with suggestions to go up and voice their concerns or their suggestions. How open is your dad to people coming up to him, whether they see him perhaps at a game or around the club?
But he's very open. I mean, I know he's trying to get around the Cooper Bar and all the other bars in the last few weeks before the games, just to try and speak to people. And again, it's, you know, we had a conversation with him today, and he's listened to what you said and what, you know, you reported Jay's observations about the Cooper Bar. And again, it's, you know, there needs to be a, as a club, as a Welsh society, we need to find a, you know, a more structured way of feedback and influencing decisions. So that is a challenge. But I mean, again, it's about people getting involved, and the focus group, Sunday's Q&A, are just small ways of doing that. And that's, it really needs to really kind of take off in that vein, because, you know, the model that the club and, you know, deployed 3 years ago, you know, it was based on the benefits, but it was also sold on the fact that the fans would be kind of running the club one day, and that needs to be a kind of gradual transition. So Les is the owner at the moment, but, you know, in 5 years' time, if everything goes to plan, then the fans will be the owners. So there needs to be involvement in decision making and influencing policy, and obviously keeping people up to date with what's happening. And obviously, I don't think there's any, many football clubs that are more open at the minute with what's happening and explaining what's going on in the background. But it's obviously more challenging to get fans influencing that you know, process of decision making, and that is, again, something that needs to take off. And obviously, small steps are happening with that. And you know, I'd encourage people to go to the Q&A on Sunday. There's a focus group been formed, and, you know, that's, again, I think things like that was tried in the past, but again, these are the things that need to happen and continue happening and building on them. But, you know, it is a case of a two-way thing, as you say. I think you said it last week, it's a two-way thing, and it is. And even this podcast is a huge kind of, well, I wouldn't say huge, but, you know, it's a significant way of getting fans' points across, and you've got different fans on each week, and then, you know, people are listening to it at the club. So it's anything that you can do to break down those barriers, you know, is positive. So,
Jay, I'm pretty sure that you had a question regarding an email you sent to the Welsh Society last week, and there was an element of confusion in the reply you got. I'll just leave that open for you to ask.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much a question as just a point. I didn't realise, maybe I'm just being naive. We've got enough listeners that post in Steelmen Online and the Facebook page and all that who hopefully, you know, can correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm in the minority here. Obviously, from the very start, there was sort of a movement, if you like, a bit of protest, the fact that there were no repayment options or, you know, paying it up monthly, because to ask people to put their hand in and give a total of £300 at the minimum from the off seemed a bit, you know, a bit far-fetched for a lot of football fans. So when I heard that we were going to be now taking £10 a month, I just naturally assumed that it meant just like anything else that you pay up. You know, you buy a couch or a car or anything else, whether it's a good or a service or a product or whatever it is, and you pay it up monthly. You know, you enter in a contract that says you're going to pay X amount every month, and you go for it. You select, you know, set up a direct debit, whatever it is. And I just assumed that was the case. So when I found out that we were now allowing people to join for £10 a month, I thought it was a fantastic idea. And it was only when I started looking into upgrade from my current Steel membership up to Claret membership that I realised that that's not how it happens. My sort of belief that the Welsh Society were offering, you know, the repayment system that you would get at any other company or organisation or whoever it is that's providing a service, that wasn't what you were paying £10 a month for. What you were essentially paying £10 a month for was, you know, a Welsh Society savings account that they would keep it, and then once you hit your total, you would get your membership. And that to me just seems a bit off. It doesn't make too much a difference to me. I'm not bothered about perks and things like that. I want to upgrade my membership because I want to do as much as I can for the club and the Welsh Society. And I've got my vote. I've already got my vote as a Steel member. So upgrading doesn't, you know, £10 a month, if I don't upgrade for until I've paid it all up, then that's fine. But it is a bit galling to know that if I want to become a Claret member and I pay the £10 a month I can afford, I can look forward to being a Claret member in 2021. It just seems a bit, you know, a bit ridiculous. And I think more so for people who have not joined it yet. If you're someone who hasn't joined it yet, you can afford £10 a month. You know, we live in a culture where people want immediate gratification. You know, you one click away, TV on demand, everybody wants the stuff here and now. So you're not going to get people joining if you say, well, give us a tenner a month and in 2.5 years you're a Steel member. Because people will start to say, well, if I need to wait 2.5 years, then I won't start till next month. Or I'll keep that tenner this month and I'll go and do this and then I'll join the next month. And you just get into a cycle where people will just put it off and put it off. So if the Welsh Society wants to, I suppose, make the £10 repayment option serious and in line with just about everything else, every good or every service you can get, then it has to move away from this idea that you just pay up and then get your membership once you've paid the total, because it's a nonsense. And yeah, you're right, I emailed last week about it to inquire, you know, what my situation was as a Steel member and upgrading, and found this out, and I emailed again. You know, I got a reply that day. I replied in turn to get confirmation, and didn't hear back. And that's fine. You know, I'm not, you know, communication has been a problem, but emails can get set aside or can get, you know, can get lost in the system. That's fine. But I was more just quite surprised and quite disappointed that that was how the £10 a month system was working, because it just seemed to me like, you know, one step forward but then two steps back.
Can I? Yeah, I mean, at the minute, I know that they are members of the Welsh Society Board are looking at how to make it more of a gradual process. So, I mean, again, they inherited this system from the club. When Leanne was in charge, it was her idea, and I think she had quite a lot of input into how it worked. And she didn't really want anybody to kind of tamper with her model. So it wasn't until Leanne left and Alan came in that the £10 a month, the monthly payment option became an option, because, you know, the payments have to go through the club, and the club didn't have the system to deal with it. Now they've got this, like the situation you say again, the problem is you've got a different levels, which, and there's a huge gap between them. So you get £300, then up to £1,000, and there needs to be a more gradual process of upgrading, and that's what they're looking at the minute. It's taken a bit longer than they would have hoped, because they need to strike a balance between, you know, rewarding fans for putting money in, and then, you know, not spending too much money on the rewards, but there will be a, you know, a new system announced soon, hopefully, which means that if you're jumping, Jay, from £300, you don't have to wait until you're at 1,000 before you get any kind of extra recognition. So that's a work in progress. Again, it's something that they're close to kind of finalising, but, you know, like they say, the challenge is to try and find rewards and benefits that don't cost them too much money and kind of negate the actual, you know, benefit of people putting extra money in. So it's a fair point, and hopefully that'll be sorted soon. I mean, if you are joining, you know, from scratch, then straight away you get a vote. But obviously, obviously it takes 2.5 years to get to 300. You then get your kind of benefits. But you know, again, that's another challenge we talked about 5 minutes ago. I talked about trying to engage people more, and that is what the Welsh society needs to do. It needs to engage the fans and make them feel involved in what's happening at Motherwell Football Club. So that would be the ultimate benefit, that you're helping the club and you're involved in it. So again, that's part of that process. That's, again, you wouldn't, you know, the minute the benefits are, when I've never used any of the benefits, you know, you get 5% off a season ticket, you get a DVD of goals. The whole thing was a bit complicated as far as I was concerned when it was set up, and it just seemed it was too many benefits and a lot of them were so small, it was just confusing matters. So I think there needs to be a simpler, you know, structure, and that's something that's been worked on. So obviously it's a shame it's not there at the minute, but, you know, it is a bit of a challenge to try and change something that's kind of set in stone. So I think your points are things that are being taken on board and will be taken on board.
Yeah, I mean, I should point out, as I tried to say earlier, during my tirade, the benefits doesn't really bother me in the slightest. The actual benefits as a steel member, I think, were pretty poor. I think to ask people £300 and give them a DVD and 5% off their season ticket, 5% off your season ticket doesn't mean much when you've already paid £300. My concern, or not concern, but I don't understand why there isn't more, you know, costly benefits. I mean, every game you go to, there's boxes in the Cooper and boxes all over the place lying shut. I mean, what's to stop the Welsh Society giving, you know, each member one game a season where they can go along a box? They would probably make a profit on the bar and things like that. So for me, there's still kind of a lack of imagination when it comes to benefits. But again, the benefits don't bother me. If I upgrade from steel to claret, I think I had a wee look at the benefits, and I think I get like a signed bottle of wine and a signed football. That's the kind of thing I would end up giving to someone to give out, like, you know, a charity raffle and things like that. The benefits are not the issue for me. It is just the slightly off-putting idea that, you know, I'm 29, and if I want to become a claret member for £10 a month, I can do so by the time I'm 35. It just seems, you know, a bit ridiculous. But obviously, if that's going to change, then that's got to be a good thing. But again, there just seems to be these little things that, you know, as Sparrow said earlier, you know, it's almost there, but not quite. I mean, the Q&A is another thing for me that, obviously, if it becomes a regular event, then great. But my first thought was, brilliant, perfect, Alan Burrows, Brian McCafferty, two former podcast guests. It'll be a great night, lots of information. But I can't go because I'm going to the Scotland game, like I would imagine a lot of Motherwell fans are. So it's just, it's little things like that. You know, it's, you know, yes, great idea, but clashes.
Again, that's the key, is that there needs to be another one soon after. I mean, I'm at you, I can't go to it. But I thought, you know, they needed something soon because, you know, it's been 6 weeks now since the takeover was ratified. They need something soon, and that was the date. And again, it ties in with the using the functions and fans who can watch the Scotland game. But like you say, there needs to be another one, you know, reasonably shortly afterwards, so that guys like you and even me can go along and you know, again, it just kind of fitted in well with the ethos of trying to get the function suites used. But again, like you say, there needs to be another one soon, yeah.
Just to wrap things up, Gav, it would be silly not to have a an esteemed journalist like yourself on and not ask about your daily life and your job. So, have you been on the STV News?
I probably have, actually, just hanging about in the background waving a dictaphone in somebody's face. I'm pretty sure I've been, but probably didn't get a mention like yourself, so just that was good kudos for the podcast, if you were in the know as to where it came from.
Yeah, we'll accept written or verbal apologies if you're listening, which I'm sure there will be. That's all for this week. We'll be back next Monday. No game this weekend, so we'll be talking. We might just be talking mince as usual, to be fair, but I'll try and find something, I'm sure. Gavin, thanks very much for your time, mate. It's been much appreciated.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Jay, Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers.
No bother, thank you.
Cheers. Until next Monday, good night.
Husband don't know what he's done. Kids don't know what's wrong with mum. She can't see, they can't see. Putting it down to another bad day. Daddy don't know what he's done. Kids don't know what's wrong with mum. So this is how it feels to be lonely. This is how it feels to be small. How it feels when your word means nothing at all. Black car drives through the town. Some guy from the top estate left a note for a local girl, and yet he had it all on a plate. So this is how it feels to be lonely.